Reverend William J. Barber II, the leader of the Moral Monday series of protests at the state capitol in North Carolina, is now organizing a moral march on Raleigh on February 14th. He is aiming to make this a national march for social and economic justice. He talked about the march on a conference call sponsored by the Campaign for America's Future. Here's a portion of the call.
In 2013, we added a dimension to the Forward Together movement because of the extreme nature of the current occupants or of the General Assembly. They say they're Republicans. We say they're extremists because we find so much contradiction in what they do and what people like their founder, Lincoln, stood for. Teddy Roosevelt stood for, and Eisenhower stood for, and even the late Senator Brooks stood for. We've been challenging them, and Moral Mondays began. More than 1,006 people were arrested. We've had more than 200 events since April of 2013 across the state. We are a indigenously led, homegrown led, state-based, deeply constitutional, deeply moral, state government focused, anti-poverty, anti-justice. Anti-poverty, anti-racism, pro-justice fusion coalition, a model off of the fusion movements that helped to push forward the first Reconstruction in the 1800s and the second Reconstruction in the 1960s. And we believe that in this country now we are in the embryonic stages of a possible third Reconstruction. And we believe that this time the extremists, rather than waiting until the success of the Reconstruction happens, that they're trying to stop it on the front end, which is why there's been such an attack on voting rights and workers' rights and unions and public education. We also believe that state movements are national movements. Last year we had upwards of 80,000 people to come. Since we've done this, we've never had less than 7,000 people to come as far back as 2007. But we don't believe that movements come from the top down, but from the bottom up, from Selma up, from Montgomery up, from Greensboro up. So what we believe is that we nationalize state movements, because what they are doing here, the Tea Party extremists, the Koch Club extremists, the Art Pope extremists, the ALEC extremists, they're running a template in a state like North Carolina to try to show what they will do, to make plans for what they will do around the rest of the country. In fact, North Carolina has the worst voter suppression bill after Shelby. We go to court on that bill in July the 6th, the challenge in federal court. But it is the worst voter suppression bill since Shelby. It's not to stop voter ID. It's about rolling back even things that North Carolina citizens have used for the last three election cycles, such as same-day registration, early voting. It is an all-out attempt to block diversity in the electorate that has the potential to reshift the South, reshift North Carolina, and break open the old strategies of the so-called solid South or the white Southern strategy. They see the power, and so they're trying to indeed stop it. And the moral movement says we must raise these issues not as mere left-right or Republican versus Democrats. We believe that language is too small, it's too puny, that what we need is to use our Constitution and our deepest moral values. For 146 years, our Constitution in North Carolina, written by blacks and whites in the first Reconstruction, has called for equal protection under the law, has set the parameters for who can vote, has said that public education is a constitutional right. In fact, it says that all political powers should be used only for the good of the whole. And one section, Article 11, Section 4, says that beneficent provision for the poor, the orphan, and the widows is the first duty of a civilized state, not the second, third, or fourth, but the first duty. So that when we see this current legislature, Tom Tillis now in the Senate, the United States Senate used to be the Speaker, we have a Senator Berger, we have Governor Corey, when we see them denying 500,000 people Medicaid expansion, engaging in the worst voter suppression that we've seen since Jim Crow, taking unemployment insurance, taking earned income tax credit that even Ronald Reagan supported, refusing to raise the minimum wage. Our own Constitution says that's a violation of the good of the whole, and it is, in a sense, uncivilized, according to the words of the Constitution. But we also stand on our deepest moral values, the convictions in Scripture, like Isaiah 10, that says, "Woe unto those who legislate evil and rob the poor of their rights." Or the New Testament that says that we have to care about the least of these, not just through individual charity, but we should care about the least of these in all that we do as a people, as a nation. And so finally, what we are pushing for are policies that are constitutionally consistent, morally defensible, and economically sane. And we're marching on February the 14th, Valentine's Day. It's called the Mass Moral March on Raleigh, HKMJ People's Assembly. We're marching for love and justice. We're marching to revive the heart of North Carolina and the heart of politics. We believe that we've got to challenge what's going on in these state houses all over the country, that the challenge to state houses is, in fact, the national-type movement that we must have in this country, and it must be raised from indigenous leadership in every state, particularly across the South. I want to thank you all for allowing us to come on today. We sent a packet of Brother Poole to you with videos and our agenda for this march. This march will kick off another year of litigation, agitation, demonstration, legislation. It is not an end. It is a beginning. And in a real sense, we say North Carolina is our Selma. Today, North Carolina is our Selma. If we want to stop this attack on voting rights, for instance, we've got to start right here in North Carolina, where we have the worst attack ever since the 1960s, literally. And we believe this is our Selma, and that's why we're marching, that's why we're litigating, that's why we're agitating, that's why we're demonstrating. And finally, by using moral language, we've been able to bring together Republicans, Democrats, young, old, gay, straight, black, white, brown, people of all different race, creeds, colors, and sexuality who are literally fighting to restore the pulse of the heart of politics in North Carolina. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Reverend Barber. You mentioned that this march on February 14th is our Selma. Tell me how important it is for people outside of North Carolina to care about how this march comes out on the 14th.
Right, on voting rights are happening in the state houses. And in North Carolina, as I said, we have the first bill, which is the worst voter suppression. We win this, we back up those that want to suppress the vote. We lose it, they will continue to spread this kind of suppression throughout the country. Secondly, when we look at Medicaid expansion, North Carolina, for instance, denied Medicaid expansion. 26 states have denied it. In a sense, it's the new political civil war. Even though the majority of the people being denied are white, the majority of black people live in the states that are denying Medicaid expansion. So there's this tricky kind of race baiting that's going on, but it's hurting all of us. So we need to be concerned about what's going on in these states, and in particular in North Carolina. I believe, and many of us believe, that North Carolina has been promoted itself as a fairly progressive state. And that one of the reasons the Koch brothers and Tea Party and Art Pope, who was our little Koch brother in North Carolina, have targeted North Carolina, because if you can roll back and keep rolled back a progressive state like North Carolina, then that inspires them to do even more in other southern states. And if you can hold back the South, you can hold back the nation. The South, though, however, is ripe for breaking open and breaking out of the restraints and the restrictions of the so-called white southern strategy. They know it. You register 30% more of African-American voters. In the South, you fundamentally change the South. You build a coalition with whites, blacks, Latinos, young and old people, a new coalition. It fundamentally changes the South. And many of them are afraid of that new day, and they're doing everything they can to suppress this possibility.
Thank you.
Well, let me just say one last thing. North Carolina really provides a powerful example of the issues that must be addressed, not only in this state, but nationally. You know, about 12 other states have joined this model of building a moral movement. You know, we can no longer allow the so-called extreme right, I don't even like to use the term extreme, the right part of it, to hijack the moral discourse and the constitutional discourse and only want to talk about things like abortion, prayer in the school, and where they stand on homosexuality, because so much of that kind of using moral language to discriminate and to promote hate and to promote disenfranchisement is the antithesis, actually, of truly moral argument. There was a time when progressives did not mind talking about moral issues. When Kennedy talked about the Civil Rights Act, he lifted it as a moral issue. When Johnson talked about the war on poverty, or the Voting Rights Act, moral issue. Abolitionist, moral issue. Women's rights was a moral issue. The New Deal under Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a moral issue. When we first started talking about Medicaid, moral issue. When Thurgood Marshall went to the Supreme Court over the Undue Pressure versus Ferguson, moral issue. The one dissenter who was a white judge, Supreme Court Justice in the 1800s, 1896, that dissented in Plessy versus, talked about it from a moral perspective. So we cannot throw away that language. And when you look at a state where 500,000 people have been denied Medicaid, 2,800 people probably have died last year because of that denial, 929,000 people had their earned income tax taken, something that Ronald Reagan stood for, and we have 500,000 children, almost 600,000 children in the state that are poor, 39% of them are African American. And you see this kind of extremism where they are pushing this agenda that basically says if you want a great America, this is what you do at the state level. Deny public education, deny money for it, deny teachers, deny health insurance, deny unemployment, deny earned income tax credit, deny women's rights, deny LGBT rights, deny the president any help even on the thing that he's doing right. Deny voting rights, and then once you have done all these things, make it easier to get a gun than it is to vote. This is a formula for a disaster in our democracy, and this is what is happening in these state capitals around this country, like in North Carolina, which is why we must have state movements that have national impact, and it must happen in every state. That's why we're doing what we're doing, and we hope other states will pick it up as well.
I have a quick question that I want to ask you, and I hope I don't get in trouble for asking you this. But Senator Tom Tillis from your state recently said that he didn't believe that government should, for example, should require people who are working in restaurants to wash their hands after they use the restroom. Mm-hmm. How do you have any hope of being able to have any sort of rational conversation about moving the country forward when that is the kind of person who gets elected to public office? Even with all of the effort that people behind you were trying to do to keep him from not getting elected?
Well, let's talk about how he got elected, which is why we need to do what we're doing in terms of litigating and marching and legislating. They passed the worst redistricting plan in 2010. It could not be vetoed by the governor, who would have vetoed it at that time. The U.S. Department of Justice approved the basic plan. We pushed against that, but now we're in court. That redistricting plan was the worst redistricting plan we've seen since the 19th century. It allowed them to stack and pack almost 50% of black voters into limited districts, which then set up a system where in 2012, we had 120,000 to 150,000 more people vote for progressive candidates than these extremists, but the extremists won because of the way the votes had been stacked, packed, and bleached. We get a supermajority then in 2013. Tom Tillis is leading that effort. And in the first 50 days, they go on a regressive, I call it a regressive rampage on steroids. Then we get to the elections this past midterm. Now, he won, but there's some things that are quite hopeful that your friends and bloggers should know. First of all, he's the only candidate in North Carolina that ever won by less than 51% of the vote. So 51% of the people voted against him. The legislature, when he left it, was at 19% in the poll. And even though he won, and even though many of the legislators came back because of these redistricting efforts, there is a great discontent with them. And we believe 216 will be a very different reality. Secondly, we were the only state where two incumbent Tea Party people lost in conservative district, North Carolina. It was out west. How did they lose? Not because we endorsed a particular candidate, but because of the Mountain Mall Monday that brought Republicans, Democrats, blacks, and whites together in the mountains with a new focus. In fact, I'm headed to the mountains tonight to do a major speech where people are coming together and seeing our common a need for each other and a need for us to move from this regressivism. Lastly, we had the largest turnout in the midterm in some ways than we've ever had before in some ways. And as I said, he only got 49% of the vote. He won by 1.6%, 30 votes per precinct. And in some ways, if the Democratic candidate had really run strong and had not abandoned the president and had talked about the issues like Medicaid, because now 60% of North Carolinians want Medicaid expansion, instead of basically running and saying, well, I'm not Obama, it may have been a very, very different outcome. So people are just about tired. His comment shows what we've known in the state, this illogical attitude toward just total deregulation. The argument that if you just let the system work, if you just do trickle-down economics, if you just deny people voting rights, everything will be fine. And when you push that to the nth degree, you get a comment like what he said. He doesn't even care if people wash their hands. Well, what we cannot do is wash our hands of politics. We cannot simply say it doesn't matter, just give up, we just got to go home. The reality is progressives and people seeking justice have always had to turn the tide. We've always had to stand up. And when we come together, we've always changed this nation. That's why I keep saying we are in the embryonic stages of a third reconstruction. The people that are fighting against progressives and civil rights leaders, if we were weak, they would not be fighting us at this level. They would not be spending these lewd amount of money, this amounts of money. They would not be talking about $900 million being put into a campaign. It is fear on their behalf. And if we recognize how strong we are and we don't organize from the top down, not from D.C. down and New York down, but if we organize from the bottom up, I still believe that we can transform this nation.
Thank you. Let me get one last question. Go ahead.
I don't have a question, but I do have a comment. This is Bruce Prescott, Norman, Oklahoma, and I didn't get any mail, probably because I have retired from my office and not getting mail, but I did get an email, which I got on the phone, so it's going to be hard for me to make it next week, but I want you to know that you are an inspiration to a lot of us around the country. We appreciate the work that you're doing, and conference calls like this give us hope that we can have an impact in our state. And if I can get on the mailing list again, I'll do my best to try to find a way to make it in one of these rallies that you've got.
Well, thank you so much, Bruce. And as I said, we're kicking off. The 14th is not an end, it's a beginning. We don't just march and quit, but our marches set the tone. And at the end of the march, we're having a people's assembly to lay out our strategy for this year. Yes, we are still planning civil disobedience direct action. Yes, we're going to do litigation. In fact, the Monday, Isaiah, after the march, we're holding a people's grand jury on Medicaid expansion. We've got a judge, a lawyer, witnesses, doctors. We're going to indict the state on wrongful death charges and on constitutional charges. We're going to bring folk forward to testify. Some of them have determinable diseases that they could be being cured of and treated, that because they're being denied Medicaid expansion, they may actually die. But they say before they die, they're going to stand up and expose what is going on in our state. We are no ways tired. I'd be willing to do some of these conference calls, you know, every so often. But I just want to say to all my progressive friends, you know, I learned this when I was a nose guard in the football. They don't put two people to block you if you're weak. So if and this is our position in North Carolina, if they threw at us the worst voter suppression in the since Jim Crow, $100 million of money in the light, we don't know how much in the dark. They had total control of the legislature and the governor's office, and the best they could do was a 1.6% victory, less than 51% of the folk voting for him because there were three candidates, 30 votes per precinct. We are not discouraged. We're saying we want one more round. We want one more round. We're going to keep all organizing right. Because they've thrown everything they could throw at us, and they still almost lost.
Reverend Barber, how can the people on this call learn more? Where should they go online? We will be posting within the next day or so some material on ourfuture.org. But in the meantime, where can people go online to learn about the February 14th march and the things that will follow?
NCNAACP, take you right there. We're on Nation Builder. Every video is there. In fact, you can also go to the Forward Together Mom Movement TV channel on Google. Every video that we've ever done is there. All the promos are there for NCNAACP are there. We'd ask you, all the bloggers, to send this out. Tell people if they can't come, they know people in North Carolina. They got kinfolk in North Carolina. To encourage them to come and to be with us at 9 o'clock right across from the campus of Shaw University on February the 14th. We will have, it's going to be a power-packed day around 11:30 that day, I think sometime 11:15. I will deliver a major, I don't call it a speech, but a charge for where we go forward and how we're going to continue to go forward. But all of the information is there, and I want to thank every one of you in advance for recognizing the need for state-based movements that have national impact. And want to encourage everybody in your own state, let's build these movements up. Nobody's going to helicopter in, but if we begin to build from indigenous homegrown leadership, we can in fact transform and change this regressive direction, I believe, that the nation is going in. And people are hungry. I've traveled all over this country. They're from New York to California to all the way to Alabama, Mississippi. They are hungry for a public policy and a fight back that is rooted in our deepest moral values and our deepest constitutional values.
Thank you very much, Reverend Barber, and thank all of you for joining us on this call. Hope to see as many of you as possible on February 14th. Thank you.
God bless.
Thanks.
Take care now.
Thank you.